So, Danny, it was just brought to my attention that you didn't just interview Kurt Busch today.
Oh, no.
You also interviewed a guy named Stingray Rob.
I was going to keep that reveal for later, but yes, Darius handed me the sheet of paper, and I said, okay, this is clearly... Like, remember, you weren't here, but the D.C. Defenders, after they won the championship a couple years ago, whenever that was, came into studio, and they did, like, some sort of weird social media prank thing where they, like, had to mention weird stuff, and, like, everyone's like, oh, Danny, you got. I'm like, I don't know that I did exactly, but whatever, it's fine. Like, Jordan Tamu had to, like, talk about bowling, and then one of the other guys had to say, like, tuna fish or something. It totally unfunny, totally stupid, but, again, they were very proud of it. But anyway, the point is, I thought it was something like that, where there's some sort of social media thing and a prank, and the guys are like, no, that's not real. Very real, and the story's actually kind of cool. We get to that in the interview, but I kind of did a triple take, I would say, when Darius handed me the info sheet.
I couldn't believe that. So some of the names in NASCAR, as you'd imagine, are wild. It's not quite like 1920s baseball reference, but it's pretty close.
Yeah.
Like, there is a pit crew chief who's very successful named Booty Baker.
Okay.
And it's just like, everyone just calls him Booty, and they're like, Booty Baker did a great job today. Coming off four, he made the decision to go get tires. And, like, Larry McReynolds is the America's crew chief, and he's just constantly talking about Booty Baker. And there's so many guys. They're all named Booty Baker.
They're all named Booty.
Like, not all of them, literally, but there is a guy named Booty Baker who's silly, and he's like a crew chief. Anyway, I'm not saying I'm shocked that there's a guy named, what was his name? Not Broccoli Rob.
Stingray Rob.
Stingray Rob. But, I mean, that's a great name.
Yeah.
Like, how come I can't be Stingray Rob?
Like,
you know?
Now, if you told me Rob Stingray, I'd go, oh, like, all one word. All right, interesting. That's fine. Rob is his last name. I think that's the slept on part.
R-O-B-B.
Yeah.
But Stingray is his name.
Yes.
And you asked him about that.
I did.
Okay.
Now, I felt like a, because, again, they're on media tours. They're doing, like, their sit-downs with different outlets and different things, and they got a lot of these to do. So I learned this kind of from by watching, like, the, you know, our guy Kevin McCarthy, his videos, right, where he would interview these dudes in these press junkets, and they're doing 77,000 of them to promote whatever movie or whatever it is, and Kevin does a great job of trying to, like, stand out and ask them different questions than everybody else does for the local news or whatever. And so I'm going, I guarantee every schlub's been like, now Stingray's a pretty crazy name. How did that happen? So I didn't want to do that out of the gate.
So tired.
And
yeah.
So we got going a little bit, and then he sort of referenced it. And I said, okay, you know, I got to ask, like, how did that come about? And it's actually a really neat story, and I'll, you know, save it for when we air that in the 6 o'clock hour. But
I'm sure it's the first time he's told this
story. Yeah, he's probably never had to say it before.
Well, all-time NASCAR name. So I just Googled, like, funny NASCAR names. Dick Trickle's the first one that comes up.
Of course, right away.
Everyone knows Dick Trickle, the most famous NASCAR driving name ever. Then you've got Stingray Rob is the number two name that comes up. Open wheel and sports car racer whose first name sounds like an aquatic animal. Yep, I would say that it sounds a lot like an aquatic animal, as it is one.
Qualifies. Yep.
Then there's a guy named Fireball Roberts. I've heard of him. Icon in the 50s and 60s. You remember Fireball?
I do not.
But there's just guys like that. Like, everyone's Bubba and Booty, and I don't know, man. But anyway, I can't wait to hear the interview coming up at 6 o'clock right here on The Fan. And if you missed Antonio Williams, the Commanders wide receiver, the rookie from Clemson, you'll hear that before we get out of here at the end of the show as well. But right now we're talking C.J. Abrams. Paul Toboni was on with the Junkies today discussing the move from shortstop to second base. So he didn't necessarily comment on why now. He just said it's been a couple-week process. Why do you think they did it right now? What does your gut tell you?
So I think it's a, hey, we're out of it. And if this means that Abrams isn't, you know, as locked in and isn't as prolific as he's been offensively for a little bit, we still have enough deposits in the bank this year because he's sustained it for long enough, being one of the best offensive players in the sport. Even if his numbers over the last month and change aren't as good, he's still had this unbelievable offensive season. We're going to get a king's ransom when we trade him this winter. And we don't care about making him happy anymore. That's my view.
It's a good answer. It's as good an answer as I've heard. So you're saying as soon as they were eliminated, this was always the plan?
I don't know about always, but in other words, if they're going, what triggers have to be hit for us to be in the trading C.J. Abrams business, okay, this coming offseason? He has a great offensive season. Check. We're out of it. or you know, or whatever. Like let me kind of back up there. Like if we are, you know, 10 games over 500 leading the wild card at this point, and you know, I don't think the trade deadline would have gone the way that it did, but once they've kind of crossed the okay, no matter what happens the last month, he's had a great year. We're not in the business of giving out long-term contracts to anybody, let alone with this lockout looming, et cetera. We are, you know, operating the dollar store, even that on a budget. He's going to be traded. We're going to get a King's ransom back. And we now don't have to worry about our standing in the standings. Once that happens, you know, we're fine. And, yeah, we don't care if we make him a little bit mad. Because if you're five games over, if you're playing great, and then you make the switch during meaningful baseball time, you risk, you know, I don't say losing him, but having him go through a spell or a swoon. And you can't afford that if you're trying to, you know, stack every W. Now that you don't feel the need to do that, I think they're able to pull the trigger.
Yeah. I'll say this. I really do appreciate the stones of this front office to do the right thing right now. It's hard to do. I mean, he's having an incredible year. They're talking about him every couple days on MLB Network as the new superstar. The numbers from the shortstop position don't happen in this era, really. He's going to end up close to 40 home runs with maybe the major league total as the leader in runs batted in. And he's going to steal 30 bases in the process. Like, it's a 35-homer, 30-steal season where he's going to hit maybe, he's hitting 280, but let's say around 280 with an OPS close to 900. I mean, it's a monster season. This, you can make the case, is one of the better years ever turned in by a middle infielder for the Nationals. Probably the best season, I guess, if you're just making a shortstop, second base, middle infield. Best year ever turned in, but for a Nats infielder, you've had Ryan Zimmerman, you've had Anthony Rendon, you've had some massive campaigns. This is probably the best that you've gotten. And it's from a 25-year-old coming into his own, who's put it all together, and here you are with 6 weeks left in the season going, hey, CJ, come to my office. And he's thinking it's another high five about how great he is.
I won player this month, right? Or this week. Yeah.
How was the All-Star performance? Or what'd you think of being in Philly and representing the Nationals and getting to start in the game was a pretty cool accomplishment. And, you know, you go through all the different things. Nah, man, we're moving you to second base. And he's like, I'm sorry, what? It's the right baseball move.
Yeah.
But in the same way that when they sent Dylan Cruz down, you go, wow, that took some balls. You know, yes. You've known this guy for 3 hours, uh-huh. And you're sending him to the minors? Okay, no problem. Go for it.
Yeah.
I mean, with C.J. Abrams, same thing. It's like in this season, the way he's putting it together offensively, in the middle of August and kind of a stretch run now where nothing matters, you're going to move him to second? I dig it. But that takes some stones from this group.
They've shown it. I mean, they've made these kinds of, I mean, Cruz and this one, I think, are the two biggest, certainly. And then, you know, keeping down Cruz unceremoniously until, you know, you accrue an extra year of service time on the back end. Again, that you guys notice those sorts of things. They notice every time they call up a reliever to go multiple innings and get his you-know-what kicked in. And then send him back down right away, you know, wearing out those frequent flyer miles up to Rochester. Players don't love that, but for somehow, some way, they've kept the train on the tracks when it comes to those things. And landing the plane on that, I think, is actually a real credit to this organization as to how good they've been in that regard, that they've been able to do that. This is the big, I would say, what am I looking for here? This is sort of the biggest pill to swallow for players, I think, probably. But I think everybody in that clubhouse knows, probably, whether you like it or not, yes, he's a leader. Yes, he's having this incredible season. But everybody knows that Nunez is the better shortstop. And anybody that's been around baseball for 17 seconds could tell you the wunderkind, who is an unbelievable glove, is the best shortstop right now on their major league roster. So him playing shortstop's not crazy.
Nunez is an elite defender, period. Like, he's not just the best shortstop on their roster. He's one of the better shortstops defensively, probably in the sport. He's a 70 defender and a 70 runner. That's the thing. When everyone's kind of beating up on him because he's one of the statistically worst offensive players in baseball in terms of OPS, it's very Jacob Young. From the last couple years where you rank like 200-some ranked qualifying big league hitters, and Jacob Young was like second to last in OPS while being this platinum glove center fielder, and you go, can you justify this? It's the same conversation now with Nassim Nunez. Young got to a point where he's going to hit 12 to 13 home runs this year, and he's a major league average offensive player in terms of OPS and stuff. Nassim Nunez is now the new Jacob Young, where it's like, man, it's really hard to play this guy every day when he's got an OPS that starts with a 5. But it's at such a premium defensive position. If you want to be an excellent defensive ball club, which, if we're being honest, is the opposite of what the Nationals have been,
not just
this year, but for several years. Like, you can't be a really good defensive team and have C.J. Abrams at shortstop. Can't happen. You can be a really good defensive team and possibly have him at second, because he's going to be fine at second. It's an easier position to play. It's an easier throw to make. You heard Paul Toboni say he thinks the throw is the issue. In fact, play that clip, Darris. I found that interesting. I want you to react to this too, Danny. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, you think of a C.J. Abrams era, there's plenty of throws in there of the 19 that you can choose from this year. There's also a lot of just routine ground balls that he boots. But it seems like Toboni's staff feels better about the range and the ability to get to balls, which he has that in spades. But the fielding part, less problematic to them than the arm.
First of all, I'll say, like, he has made strides, but I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, a lot of it is throwing, and CJ is so darn athletic. He gets to balls out the outer edges of his range.
Mm-hmm.
It's just about syncing up his top and bottom half and delivering throws on target. And so, we think that playing second base will ease that burden for him. But at the same time, a piece of this is like, you guys have seen Nas play the infield, being able to, and you saw it last night, like being able to play him at shortstop and then with CJ at time, let's say in the next, whenever it ends up being the next week, the combination of those two guys, those two positions, I think will lead us to a better position than how we're currently constructed.
I agree that he'll be a better second baseman. It's easier, and the throw will be much easier, so he'll have fewer errors there. But this is not just an arm problem at short. I mean, there's a lot of balls he just doesn't cleanly field.
Yeah, so it's a combination of things. The throwing part of it, it's when people hear that, they go, wait, his arm is bad? What does that mean? He has lazy feet. And now you're going to hear that and you go, are you calling him lazy? No. This is just sort of a baseball expression. He doesn't do a good job consistently, especially on some of those routine plays, those room service, two hoppers, of having his feet set in the right way, underneath him, balanced, et cetera, to be able to put an 80% throw together where you're going to get a runner by five steps who's Cadillacing it down to first. He misses those way too often for someone that's playing at that level, right? And that's a thing that even if you aren't doing things fundamentally correct at second base, to your point, it's just an easier throw. It's shorter. There's more where you're headed towards first. Whereas at shortstop, you got to create your own momentum a lot of times by taking great angles on balls. You could just watch those guys take ground balls before a game. You could watch some of the different plays and you try to think back to ones that Abrams made or that Nunez made, etc. Nunez has outstanding, world-class, top-of-the-line feet, and that's where all of it starts. So, yeah, maybe Nunez is a bit of a stronger arm. It's not as if Abrams is devoid of arm strength. It's not about that. It's about the excellence of getting your feet underneath you as part of the ground ball fielding operation that Abrams, frankly, has struggled with. And that's where his errors come from, and that's where both his fielding errors and his throwing errors come from, are those things. And, Toboni's, I think, being very kind, saying he's made strides. Respectfully, no, he hasn't. Like, you know what I mean? I would take issue with that. I don't think he has, and I don't know how much of a priority it was for him to do that.
Yeah, I would also – I think everything you said is true. I also think Nunez has a much stronger arm than C.J. Abrams. And Abrams has an average to tick above average big league arm. Like, it's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. But in the same way, when you were watching Curtis Meade play out of position at third base for a while, and he would, like, purposefully one-hop the ball over there from deep behind the bag or whatever, he'd kind of make a long throw and not a lot of juice on it. When Nunez is at short, it is visibly different. It
yes.
looks like Kali Akmanis throwing a ball in an out route, and then Jaden Daniels ripping one in there or something like that. Based on Savant, which is not always the best metric, but it measures like velocity and average throw or whatever. Arm strength, C.J. Abrams is actually below big league average at around 42nd percentile, I think, last I looked. Nunez is close to 60th percentile. So just an indication. But the point is the point, which is they're going with a really good defensive shortstop for the rest of this season, which will help some of these young arms. You're going to get more outs. You're going to help your staff. That's a good thing. I do wonder, I'm not expecting them to spend money because that would be just crazy.
On what? Players?
That would be so funny if they spent money on a player. Dude, whoa. I got one. Wait.
Stop it.
Hold on it. I got one. They sign a player for money. It takes Oh, my God.
No. I was actually thinking of this joke.
Yeah.
Double-digit millions of dollars for a major league caliber baseball player.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Danny.
I know.
Oh, you're back in the comedy game.
I know.
I actually just thought of one. The Learners call Paul Toboni up.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, we want this guy. We're going to stroke the check. Come on. Who's funny?
Who's funny?
We're just funny.
We're just funny.
We're just having a good old time here. But anyway, free agent shortstops for this year. J.P. Crawford, 31 years old. Ha-Sung Kim, 30 years old. Mauricio Dubon, I mean, that could be the kind of guy they go with, honestly. But, like, I wonder if they sign one of these dudes to either be their starter. Like, could you bring in a Taylor Wall stinks. There's not really good options here. I'll be very honest with you.
You're not into Orlando Arcia?
Not so much. Like, could they sign nubby J.P. Crawford or Ha-Sung Kim or, you know, IKF, like Isaiah Kiner-Falefa or some jag like that, to be their shortstop next year? Or do you just – I mean, are you really going to roll Nassim Nunez out there in the middle infield as your shortstop, your captain, so to speak, for $1.57 after he posts a 585 OPS? That's a tough sell.
Yeah, maybe.
It's a lot easier to do that at second. Like, you can talk me into – and I love defense and I love Nas more than most people. Give me elite glove and 50 steals, and that's a baseball player that'll have a spot on my team. But you could talk me into a 590 OPS at second. It's a lot harder to do that at short. And maybe they'd say, well, what's the difference if CJ's at second? You got the same thing. CJ might not be at second. Maybe that's what happens. Maybe you get your shortstop who's in AA or AAA, who's a little closer. You know, and that player takes over by the end of next year. Because the long-term solution here is Eli Willett's last year's number one pick. But he's not going to be in the big leagues next season. He's 2 years away.
Yeah, is it Seaver King's job after a September call-up? And maybe he shows and he competes at spring training with one of these veterans for $11? Maybe that's
maybe
the plan.
The combination of Seaver King and Nassim Nunez is kind of the play there?
If I had to guess. Or the player haul they get when they trade C.J. Abrams. Because I think that's coming. I think that's the second phase of this.
Yeah, which we talked a little bit about yesterday. We'll certainly get back into in the days ahead. Grant and Danny on the Fan. The Commanders have a dress rehearsal Saturday against the Detroit Lions. But are they going to have anybody act in their dress rehearsal? Or will the curtains just open and we're going to be sitting there looking at a stage that's empty? That's next on the Fan.